This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss three strategies for preparing for allergy season with nutraceutical formulator Dr. Gordon Chang. We'll find out how to get your mojo back with the Tonic Roundtable of Experts. We'll learn about mental health support for those with autism with researcher Dr. Carly Albaum. And lastly, we'll discover yoga for peace and harmony with yogi Radha Metro Midkiff. Before we get to that, here's your Tonic Quick Shot. Young to middle-aged women who reported drinking 8 or more alcoholic beverages per week, more than one per day on average, were significantly more likely to develop coronary heart disease compared with those who drank less, finds a study presented at the American College of Cardiology's annual scientific session. The risk was highest among both men and women who reported heavy episodic drinking or binge drinking, and the link between alcohol and heart disease appears to be especially strong among women, according to the findings. The study focused on 18 to 65-year-old adults and is among the largest and most diverse studies to date examining links between alcohol and heart disease. Heart attacks and other forms of heart disease are on the rise in younger populations in North America, fueling concerns about worsening health outcomes. At the same time, alcohol use and binge drinking have become more common among women than previous decades. Researchers categorized participants' overall alcohol intake as low, meaning 1 to 2 drinks per week for both men and women, moderate, 3 to 14 drinks per week for men and 3 to 7 drinks per week for women, or high, 15 or more drinks per week for men and 8 or more drinks per week for women. They separately categorized each participant as either engaging in binge drinking or not. And binge drinking was defined as more than 4 drinks for men or more than 3 drinks for women in a single day. People who reported no alcohol use were not included in the study. The researchers adjusted the data to account for age, physical activity, smoking, and other known cardiovascular risk factors. The incidence of coronary heart disease increased with higher levels of alcohol consumption. Among women, those who reported high alcohol intake had a 45% higher risk of heart disease compared with those reporting low intake and had a 29% higher risk compared with those reporting moderate intake. The difference was greatest amongst individuals in the binge drinking category. Women in this category were 68% more likely to develop heart disease compared with women reporting moderate intake. Men with high overall intake were 33% more likely to develop heart disease compared with men who had moderate intake. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: the Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Gordon Chang in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. Omega Alpha's products are created by their scientific team headed by their owner, operator, and CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Dr. Chang holds a PhD in physiology and biomedical engineering from the University of Toronto. He has 2 years postdoctoral experience in clinical biochemistry, looking at free radicals and antioxidants. He's published over 20 peer-reviewed articles and conference proceedings. He's a regular guest on this show and an all-time fave. Welcome back, Gordon. How are you doing?
Very good, Jimmy. How are you today?
Doing really, really well, all things considered, because we're getting into that time of year where I get a little bit, you know, stuffed up and congested and headachy. I've got sort of like two seasons. Starts off in spring and then, you know, later on in summer, near the end, it's ragweed. But let's talk about some allergies. What's going on?
I know exactly what you're talking about, because around this time of the year, the allergy thing raises its head. It makes my life miserable. I can't sleep at night because my nose is all stuffed up.
Yep.
One of the tricks I've learned is to sleep on my side, so that at least one nostril is breathing. Right, the other one might be plugged up, but at least I can get air in with one nostril.
My wife makes sure that I do that, because if I lie on my back, I snore, so I get the elbow. So I'm on my side. I hear you.
Right. Anyway, but getting back to these allergies, I mean, you know, it's the thing. You would be surprised that every year I suffer from it. I know what I should be doing, but it's like anything else. We don't get up off our behind to do anything until it hits us. So most of us are not in the prevention mode, but in the treatment mode.
Is there anything we can do to prevent it? Is there anything we can do?
Well, prevention is a lot of care, right? When you say prevention, I always tell everybody, do a liver cleanse, you know, about 3 weeks to a month before, and keep on doing a liver cleanse, right? Because one of the things, as I said, if there's less toxins in your system, right, when you react to the allergens that are in the air, the reaction is not as bad as if you already filled up with toxins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the analogy I always use to everybody. In the wintertime, I can sit in a smoke-filled room. Back in the day when they used to allow you to smoke in a restaurant, mm-hmm. I can sit in there for about half an hour before I need to run out. In allergy season, 5 minutes, and I got to head out the door. I can't sit there because during allergy season, my system is filled with toxins. That was in my younger days, before I knew any better, right?
Yeah.
So now you start off by that. But for most of us, it's too late to do the prevention side of it. But what I would also say is that, you know, better late than never.
Yeah.
Do the liver cleanse, because as if you happen to clean out some of those toxins, right, even those generated by the allergens, it lightens the load on your body. Another thing that I love to use, and I use it myself, quercetin. All right. I combine quercetin with stinging nettles, right? And I used I normally look at the quercetin, and the quercetin says 2 capsules a day type of thing. That's for everyday good health. If I'm fighting allergies, I usually take about 6 or 8 capsules twice a day.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot, but really it is not a lot. And the nice thing about any of these things, like the quercetin, it is quite safe, right? And I'm using it short-term. I'm not going to be using it for 6 years. You know, when I say 6 to 8 capsules twice a day, I am just doing it probably for less than a month, because fortunately my allergies usually run for about 3 weeks or so, and then I'm good, right?
And what's the quercetin doing? Is it helping with inflammation, or is it doing something else?
There's not enough studies to say exactly their mechanisms, right? But we do know quercetin is a good antioxidant. And one of the things we know about antioxidants and anything to do with allergies, there's also always an anti-inflammatory, there's an inflammation pathway that causes all the symptoms of allergies, right?
Right.
So if you can take if you can take antioxidants. Antioxidants, every single antioxidant known to man is an anti-inflammatory,
mm-hmm.
right? Because one of the most important things in inflammation pathways are free radicals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But not every single anti-inflammatory is an antioxidant.
Right.
Right. So this is, and I do believe there's some information to say that the quercetin also have an antihistamine effect. Okay, but I do believe that the major pathway is as an antioxidant. So after having said that, there's a whole bunch of different antioxidants you can take, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of more information generated with the quercetin than with the other antioxidants. But you won't go wrong by by taking a large amount of different types of antioxidants. So things like pine bark, things like grapeseed extract, okay? Thing, you know, bioflavonoids, all those things would help. Vitamin C is also helpful. Mm-hmm. Now, on the herbal side, you know, there's a lot of information with the singer nettles. The singer nettles, I usually take a liquid extract, and the reason for the liquid extract is the active ingredients are in a form that is closest to its native conformational state. So that means it's closest to its most efficacious form. So that's why I usually try to do a liquid extract.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So usually I take twice the amount. And, you know, the thing with allergies, too, you know, you got to do the common sense things. Something as simple as staying indoors at the crack of dawn, because I usually find the allergens are greatest in the morning and greatest in the evening, right? If you're allergic to tree pollen, that is.
Yes, and that's me, yeah.
Right. Buy yourself a HEPA filter system, right? Put it in your bedroom, lock the door. So that at least it cleans out the air in the bedroom when you're sleeping.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So there are a lot of these common sense things that I encourage people to do.
I want to shift gears a bit. So springtime means allergies for me. But the other thing it means is a meeting of everybody in the industry out west at CHFA, which is the, you know, the industry trade group for nutraceuticals and organics and things like that. Were you out west recently?
I was. And you know what? It was a good show. We met with a lot of individuals who are store owners. I mean, we have a line that we sell. So it was nice to meet friends that you don't see too often. And as I say, I see them once a year. But what's also interesting is that it tells us how much the industry itself has grown. I remember when I first started in the industry in 1992. We were considered a very cowboy industry,
yep.
Meaning that you never knew what it was that people were making, how it was made, et cetera, et cetera. Today, with regulations, it has stabilized the industry. To me, it has opened up the industry for consumers who can rest assured now that the products have made with certain standards that have been met. And the standards are not easy standards, but the standards there nevertheless, right? For example, you know, something as simple as where the product is manufactured. All the people who manufacture products have to have facilities that follow GMP guidelines. GMP guidelines are basically a certain way of doing things, so that if you ever get, you have ways of checking from the raw material coming in to the finished product going out. There is paperwork that people can follow. You can trace everything, right? That's on the big picture, right? The smaller picture means that we have now the ability to qualify all of our ingredients, meaning that what we do at Omega Alpha, we take the raw materials when they come in. We have generated a database of all the different herbs that we use so that we can identify the herbs using something called HPLC, which stands for high pressure liquid chromatography. So we're able to quantify and identify the different herbs that have come in, and based on that we can rule out any type of misidentification of herbs, right? Because in all fairness, sometimes when herbs come in, if you're buying them in a ground up powder form, it's easy to misidentify them, because you know what, a powder is a powder is a powder. If it looks green, it smells like this or that, you can pass away. But because we use HPLC, we're able to identify active ingredients, active peaks, so we can say this herb is definitely what we're looking at, as opposed to something that is substituted, for example.
Like filler, right?
Like, no, filler is not a bad word, but it's, misidentification of herb is the worst, because
okay.
you might get something which might be noxious or toxic, right? was with the identity test that we have, we're able to positively identify everything. So there's never any mistake in using the different herbs.
Makes sense.
All right. And another thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is also things like best before dates. Back in the day, everybody looked at the things and said, oh, it's expired. But what they don't realize, expiry dates and best before dates, they're not the same thing. Health Canada will never let you sell a product if past a certain date the ingredients become toxic. I mean, because that would never fly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you see expiry dates or best before dates, it usually means, you know, for example, let's take something simple that everybody can understand, vitamin C, right? Before the expiry date, the amount of vitamin C, let's say, is 1,000 milligrams per capsule, right? At expiry, it might be 1,000 milligrams or it might be a little bit less than 1,000 milligrams. So the expiry date just usually means the strength of the product. It doesn't mean that the product has gone bad. It just means the strength may be diminished. So like 6 months after expiry, vitamin C, instead of 1,000 milligrams, it may be 900 milligrams, or it may be 800 milligrams, right? But it is still vitamin C. It's still there's no toxic ingredients in there. Sometimes people base best before date on the packaging material, because if the packaging material breaks down, you know, they say, oh, it's no good anymore. But,
right,
you know, it's the product in itself is still very, very good. And I get a lot of questions about people asking about that, because sometimes they buy it and they use it for 2 days and they stick it in the fridge, et cetera, et cetera. Right, and usually I say if it's never been opened, it's the strength that might be reduced is probably still good. If it's been opened, on the other hand, one of the things I want to tell people about, I worry about is, again, it depends on the product. If it's been opened and if it's a liquid product and people have been putting their mouth to it, etc., you can get bacterial growth in there. And if you're getting bacterial growth, the best thing to do is to toss it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If, on the other hand, if it's like a dry powder, you may get oxidation of the powder, right? And it may not taste the way that it is. The taste will change with time because of oxidation, etc. But again, most of the time, the product is still itself quite good. The analogy I use is like yogurt. Who would have thought that way back when whoever invented yogurt would have taken spoiled milk and said, oh, this stuff is good for you.
Yeah, real pioneer, right?
Or even cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? If this was, sorry, something based on best before dates, you say, oh, it's cheese, this thing is moldy, has also, nobody would eat that stuff.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's just what is acceptable.
Makes a ton of sense. Well,
yeah.
Thank you for coming on the show today to explain all of that.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Gordon Chang. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss how to get your mojo back on The Tonic.
At Pure Encapsulations, good starts with uncompromising standards. This is why we avoid additives such as magnesium stearate. Although we know it could speed up production time, we also know it doesn't add any health benefits. Instead, time is our additive. To maintain the integrity of the premium ingredients that do benefit your health. But our commitment to wellness doesn't end there. It extends to our planet as well. Through our sustainability initiatives, we are making strides toward a healthier future.
Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal. Organic or wild-crafted, these oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or skin lover's blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
We've done over 1,200 interviews on the Tonic. Almost all of those have been me interviewing one person regarding a health and wellness issue. But sometimes there's more than one solution to a problem. I've invited three experts to come on the show and give us advice based on their particular expertise. Herbalist and supplements maker Joel Thuna, naturopathic medicine expert and researcher David Nelson, and a chiropractor and rehab specialist Sandra Deutsch. Welcome, everybody.
It's great to be here, Jamie. It's so nice to be on the show and great always to get asked back.
I agree fully.
Yeah, great panel. Thanks for having us all here today.
So, gentlemen, today we're going to discuss how to get your mojo back. And I'm not going to tell tales out of school. Let's just say, you know, I'm a man in his late 50s and there are days when I feel I've got my mojo. And then there's days when it's pretty clear to me I do not have my mojo. So I'm hoping you guys can help. Joel, let's start with you. Are there any natural health products that might be able to help with one's mojo?
Definitely. First thing, easy one, is just to make sure you have a good, well-balanced multivitamin, multi-mineral daily. That helps with every aspect of your health. On top of that, we can go into specifics like horny goat weed, which is a herb from China that temporarily increases testosterone for both women and men, gives you energy, endurance, and mojo. Vitamin B12, in this case, you definitely want to go with the active form. Any of your ginsengs, that could be North American or Asian, doesn't really matter. Maca. And then another one, which you may not have heard of before, is from the Caribbean called Bois Bande. And it has a long history of use in this realm.
Joel, you know, it's an all-male panel today. Are those products, are those appropriate for women who might be feeling that their mojo isn't quite where it should be?
The only thing you have to be careful with women on these, all of these will work, no problem. With the ginsengs, though, you want to avoid the Asian ginsengs for women. Specifically, you want to avoid, for example, your Korean red, your Chinese ones. And the reason behind that is they can cause hot flashes. But if you go with what are called cool ginsengs, which are your North American or your Siberian ginseng, no issues. And they'll get the same benefits without the risk.
Okay. And while we're talking about women's health issues, when it comes to this, I presume, you know, there may be larger issues at play when one reaches a certain age, either perimenopause or menopause, where, you know, perhaps consulting with their physician or naturopath would be the route to go if they're feeling less than all they could be. Would you agree?
That makes a great deal of sense.
David, what about lifestyle choices?
Yeah, you know what? Lifestyle choices address this mojo thing in a major way. So you're looking at six different classifications of lifestyle choices. I'm going to talk about one or two of them. Nutrition, exercise, sleep, social networks, mindfulness, getting outside. All of these things can modify your mojo. And what we're really talking about is the expression of vitality that you're feeling. It's whether or not you're flourishing. And there are studies going on around the world now that are looking at what gives us this internal feeling of the ability to conquer the day. What is that? What does that look like? And it's part hormonal, it's part blood sugar, it's part immune response, it's part the way that your brain is receiving these things. What do you have to do? You got to make sure you do maintenance on the vehicle. The maintenance on the vehicle is you can't just change the motor oil once a decade. It has to be done on a regular basis. That's how you get your mojo back. You got to look after yourself in self-care. So nutrition, eat a clean meal. Don't eat ultra-processed food all the time. Sleep well, 6 to 8. Get 20 minutes of exercise 5 days a week. Go hang out with people. Turn your brain off and get outside. All of those things from a lifestyle perspective can help shape your experience of the world, especially as you move. And then you fill it in supplementally, right? Then you do what Joel's going to tell you to do. Then you go get some exercise with somebody like Sender, bring it all together, and that's going to give you your best chance of flourishing, vitality in the long term.
So my origin story is when I was in my 30s, I was morbidly obese. So I used to weigh 242 pounds. And then in my late 30s, I lost 52 pounds.
Incredible.
And You know, obviously I did it, well, not obviously, but I did do it for health reasons. But there were emotional and psychological reasons too, because when you're carrying that kind of weight, you don't feel good about yourself. And when you don't feel good about yourself, you're not going to feel sexy. You're not going to feel, you're not going to feel confident. You're not going to, you're not going to want to be in a situation, even if you're with somebody that you love and care for, because you don't feel good about yourself. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, from, I can tell you personally that, you know, since I've taken off that weight and since I've kept it off, I don't think about those things anymore. I don't worry about that. I feel better about myself. And I think, you know, a lot of things that we're talking about, the fundamental interconnectedness of sleep and exercise and emotional health and supplements and good food, they're the foundations that you build everything on, right? Like, if the underpinnings aren't there, then I think you've got a problem. So let's talk about one of those underpinnings. Sender, let's talk about exercise, stretch, or movement and how that interplays with one's sense of sexual self.
Well, I think like you kind of hit the nail on the head there when you were talking with, you know, looking better naked. And, you know, when you look in the mirror, how do you feel about yourself? And if you look good and feel good, which comes with exercise and, you know, daily movement and having a good strength training routine, a good cardiovascular routine, incorporating yoga, Pilates for your core and flexibility, those all tie into, you know, your sexual well-being and your sexual health and desires, and also releasing hormones such as testosterone, growth hormone, estrogen for women, to ensure that we stay really youthful and are able to keep that mojo going as we continue to age and feel good about ourselves when we look in the mirror and when we look at our partners, and making sure that we have that zest and that that attraction. And, you know, everyone, you know, typically most people, what brings them into the gym is somewhat of, you know, looking better, feeling better. And those two really tie together.
I want to focus on women because, you know, we're a panel of men. I think more women are going to the gym now and they're not afraid to put on muscle that, like, perhaps they might have maybe 10 years ago, because they see the connection between being strong and being healthy and being confident. Are you seeing that in the gym, Sender? Are you seeing more women coming in and are they doing more weight training and stuff like that?
Almost definitely, because I think it's being more aware in the public now and the media in terms of you know, teaching women that they're not going to bulk up because they don't have the same types of hormones that men do that are going to allow them to kind of bulk even if they lift heavy weights. You're not going to gain that bulk unless, you know, you have a certain level of testosterone in your body, and also, you know, you start eating to bulk. So if you lift heavy weights, you're going to stimulate cells to regrow. You're going to release growth hormone, which is going to, you know, enhance your vitality like we're talking about. It's going to increase your mojo, your testosterone for women, and estrogen. That's all going to be elevated through the heavy weight training while not bulking and not gaining weight, but you're going to tone even by lifting heavy weights and making yourself feel incredible.
Maybe I'll just jump in there for a second, just jump on what Sender's saying there in terms of, let's connect the whole mojo hormone workout piece.
Yeah.
You know, there's consequences for not working out. Osteoporosis is one of them. You have decreased bone metabolism, decreased bone density over time. You have an increased risk of severe menopausal symptoms as a woman when you're not exercising and eating healthy. So there's a combination there in sleeping. So when you bring all those things together, like you said, Jamie, when you talk about a lifestyle measure, there's never one thing. Calcium's not going to solve osteoporosis for women, for example.
Right.
You have to take a more holistic approach. When you look into the literature, they're doing outcome trials now where they're not using a linear approach. They're using a holistic approach for outcome. Let's do a bunch of stuff and then let's see what happens with the outcome instead of just giving someone 1 gram of calcium and see if it offsets the risk of osteoporosis. We know now you can't take linear solutions.
It's interesting, you know, I came to natural health sort of later in life, right? Like part of my journey was, and I think a lot of people feel this way, you know, they'll come to health first through diet and exercise. They probably want to lose a few pounds. They probably want to look better. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you sort of get immersed and you sort of learn. And what I've learned, and Joel, I think you'll back me up on this, Sender, as well, there's not a one solution that fits everybody. And not everybody is going to work out five times in the gym and do weights. Some people are going to walk. Some people aren't going to get their vegetables in at every meal. Some people can make do with 6 hours sleep. They don't need eight. But there is a combination of all these things that will work for you. Would you agree with me, gentlemen? Like,
oh, for sure. Definitely. Any type of movement is excellent. And like even you're increasing blood flow, circulation, then that's also, you have to remember, going throughout your body. And just by moving, you're increasing the circulation to the genital area, which is going to, you know, bring on, you know, people seem to also have desires following a good workout with their partner, for example, because you've elevated that cardiovascular activity. And it can be anything from dancing, jogging, to lifting weights, to just moving and using that holistic approach like you're discussing. Figuring out what works for you and your body. I think that's very important, like you're discussing. It's not a, you know, one size fits all.
You know, you raise an interesting point.
No pun intended.
You raise an interesting point, you know, working out together. That can kind of be an aphrodisiac, you know, like watching your partner exercise with you, like, you know, like maybe you're doing yoga, maybe you're going for a hike. It's that interaction in a non-sexual way, which may actually lead to better feelings in that department.
Right. It's intimate but non-sexual, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, you can have those moments where it's a social connection between two people. You have a similar goal and a similar mindset. Of course, it should increase the union of attraction between the two of you. It's a great idea.
The one thing you always want to remember is there is no one solution that works for everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to find their own path. And the big thing with that is, if you're trying something and it's not working to the extent that you want it to, don't give up. Just modify it slightly and try a little change. And eventually you will find one or two or three or four or five that work for you.
Fantastic advice. Thank you all for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Jamie. It's so great to be here all the time.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Great. Next time, we're going to discuss mind fog. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. Tired of lineups at your pharmacist? Why not try Pharma-Z at the Zoomer Store? Powered by the Health Depot, an Ontario-accredited pharmacy, Pharma-Z offers a concierge approach to filling, refilling, and managing your prescriptions with free delivery anywhere in Ontario. To get started, visit ZoomerStore.com and click on Pharma-Z. And then click on the Circle of Care Pharmacy program for your free initial consultation with a clinical pharmacist. Don't wait. Go today.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Dr. Carly Albaum is a CIHR-funded researcher and a research fellow at York University. Her current research focuses on common factors in cognitive behavior therapy for autistic youth, with the aim of understanding why certain children benefit from participating in therapy while others do not. She's interested in examining various therapeutic process factors, such as therapeutic alliance, youth engagement, and parent involvement in relation to treatment change and improvements in mental health outcomes for autistic young people. Welcome to the show, Carly. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So very recently, there was World Autism Day. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so yesterday was World Autism Acceptance Day, and that's an international effort that really aims to promote acceptance of autistic people. It's really about valuing autistic people for who they are without trying to change them, and it's about creating a space that's inclusive and supportive of autistic people and really celebrates their neurodivergence.
Those who have autism, do they suffer from mental health issues like anxiety or depression?
Definitely. Across the lifespan, we see that autistic people experience higher rates of mental health issues than those without it, autism. And that includes anxiety, depression, as well as other psychiatric conditions like obsessive compulsive disorder or ADHD.
I would imagine that some of those symptomologies would appear to somebody who didn't know as more symptoms of autism than necessarily something like depression or anxiety. Is that problematic?
A lot of the time it can be unclear whether some of the symptoms or challenges a person is experiencing is a result of the autism or a result of, you know, other experiences that all of us tend to have, you know, whether that is anxiety or depression. You know, from my perspective, it's not always about knowing the root of the cause, but understanding that the problem is there and we can still find ways to address that.
What are the particular challenges for those with autism that have mental health issues?
Well, I mean, just like non-autistic folks, autistic people have their own individual experiences. And so there aren't necessarily challenges that are so specific or unique for them that we don't also see in people without autism. That being said, the research that I've been involved with has largely focused on the role of emotion regulation, and that's a process that we have. It's our ability to really monitor and modify our emotional reactions to a given situation or a problem in a way that's adaptive and constructive or helpful. And what we know from our research is that autistic individuals, particularly youth, tend to have a greater difficulty regulating their emotions, and that might be one factor that can contribute to higher rates of mental health issues for them. At the same time, there's often aspects of the environment that can negatively impact their well-being. And so these are things like, you know, overstimulating sensations, maybe strong smells in the environment or loud noises that can be really overwhelming for people on the spectrum. We also know that there's higher incidence of bullying and lack of social supports for these folks. And the resources that have been developed for mental health supports are often done so from a neurotypical lens, and they don't necessarily translate or aren't always appropriate for those who are neurodivergent.
So, you know, having many guests on the show, I've come to understand that certain types of treatment aren't necessarily for everybody, but I imagine that dichotomy also pertains for somebody who's neurodivergent. How can you tell if someone suffering from autism would benefit from a particular mental health intervention such as therapy?
Yeah, so our research has shown, you know, similar to people without autism, individuals who are willing to engage in their treatment, are motivated to make changes, who really actively take a part in their treatment, and are able to form a strong therapeutic relationship with their therapist are the ones that are most likely to benefit from those treatments. And then, you know, in the case of autistic youth, children, adolescents, it's also really important to have a parent or caregiver involved in their treatment. And so when caregivers are involved, youth are better equipped to take the skills that they're learning in therapy and use them in their day-to-day life, whether that's at home or in school or in their jobs or out in the community. So there are some adaptations that can be done that really are likely to enhance the benefit of some of those programs.
You know, people throw around the phrase, you know, on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But in this particular context, I would imagine if you're in a different place on the spectrum, you're going to experience sort of these mental health issues differently and probably be more capable of benefiting from therapy. Is that right? Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, to some extent. I think, you know, most of the research that's been done to date has really focused on people on the spectrum who have a stronger verbal ability. So they're verbally able, they're able to communicate and engage in conversation in a more, I try to avoid the word typical, but in a way that most people are able to engage. So using language
right.
to talk about their emotions and talk about their feelings. And of course, we also have tended to focus on people with autism who also, who don't have a co-occurring intellectual disability. And so that's really kind of a gap in the literature and a gap in research right now is understanding how do we modify these supports who for people who are also experiencing challenges with cognitive skills, so problem solving, thinking, reasoning, using verbal language and things like that.
Okay, and I understand that your current research is about the use of cognitive behavioral therapy for those who have autism who also have mental health issues. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on and what some of the results are that you found?
Yeah, so our team's been exploring the use of cognitive behavior therapy to support emotion regulation in autistic youth. So CBT is a short-term therapy. It's typically about 8 to 12 sessions, and it really focuses on the connection between our thoughts, our feelings, and our behavior. And so the program that we've been researching was designed for autistic youth specifically, and the way that that was done was by modifying kind of the standard CBT to include things like more concrete visual materials that tend to be better received or better understood by autistic youth. We also try to incorporate child-specific interests, whether that's into the materials or the examples we're providing or the rewards that we, you know, provide kids for being actively engaged in sessions, and as well having their parents involved in each session. So what we found from our original trial was that at the end of treatment, you know, compared to a waitlist control group, youth who took part in this program tended to have greater improvements in their emotion regulation skills and also improvements in their mental health.
So when we talk about CBT, is this something that is available in the public? Like you're doing research into it, but is it currently available for those with autism, or is that not really the case? And this is sort of testing out whether it would be beneficial and therefore brought out to the public.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So there are definitely programs and clinicians out there that do provide CBT to autistic people, again, across the lifespan. I think the challenge comes with just the accessibility of those programs.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a high demand and not enough support available. So part of this is also, you know, training future therapists to be able to deliver interventions or mental health treatments to this population so that we can really increase access for them.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
That was Dr. Carly Albaum. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss yoga for peace and harmony on The Tonic. The Big Carrot is a worker-owned natural food market that's been committed to local, organic, non-GMO, and sustainable food systems since 1983. They're a one-stop shop offering produce, grocery, bulk, body care, and holistic dispensary. The juice and smoothie bars and kitchens serve up hundreds of healthy dishes and drinks daily. Building community is at the core of their vision, which they deliver through education, outreach, and giving. They want everyone to share in the goodness they offer. Visit their website for more information at thebigcarrot.ca.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Radha Metro Midkiff is a certified life coach and executive director for the Integral Yoga Institute, New York. Her upbringing in yoga began at an early age, having been raised under the tutelage of Sri Swami. Oh, Radha, help me out with this. This happened last time.
Satchidananda.
Okay. At Yogaville, her parents, Integral Yoga ministers Bhagavan and Bhavani Metro, moved several times to ensure her and her five siblings received an Integral Yoga school, Yogaville education from first to through 12th grade. At a young age of 18, Radha was already certified as both a Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga instructor. She was among a select group of four individuals to receive the direct blessing of Dharma confirmation from the Swami, a rare and highly coveted honor. Welcome back to the show, Radha. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Jamie. Thank you so much for having me back.
So in this time of distress and, I would argue, extreme disharmony and lack of peace, I'd like to explore how yoga might help us find some peace and harmony. Are you up for that?
Yes, absolutely.
So I guess the first question is, how can yoga do that?
So I think the most important key here when we're talking about yoga is that we're not just talking about the physical postures that you do when you go to the gym or you go sit on a mat. What we're talking about is yoga as an integrated lifestyle. And something that is based on the 5,000-year-old science that we then weave into everything we do in our daily life. And literally, the whole entire purpose of yoga is to get us to our own feeling of inner peace the awareness that we are peace within us, and that that is always in us, and it's only the outside things that disturb our peace. It's not like someone can take your peace away. It's something that you own that exists within you, and therefore, we spend all of our time in yoga trying to protect that peace, making sure we're in touch with that peace, and making sure that nothing is there to disturb the peace.
That makes sense. So I know that with your particular practice, you consider there to be five different pillars which prop up the practice. So I thought we could explore that. So let's start off with the realization of your true nature. What does that mean, and how does that work?
So that's a little bit what I was just talking about, is this idea that our true nature is this undisturbed peace that lives within us. It's eternal peace, and it's only the perception of outside things that disturb our peace. So it's like looking in a mirror, right? When you're looking in a clean mirror, you see your face and it looks beautiful and it's all clean and clear. However, if the mirror is dirty, then all of a sudden our reflection doesn't look so clean anymore and clear. And so what happens is we start to have this idea that we are dirty because our reflection is dirty. So when we're talking about it in terms of our peace, we start to think our peace has been disturbed because the reflection of our peace is disturbed. But truly, our peace that exists within us is there, undisturbed, always there for us. And it is just the reflection of our thoughts, of what's going on around us, of the argument we just had, our thoughts about ourselves that actually makes us feel like we're disturbing our peace. But our peace is always there. It's undisturbed. It's just there for us to tap into anytime we want, really. And so all of the practices that we do in integral yoga, these five branches of yoga or six branches of yoga, are all so that we can find a way to tap into that peace. And so that's really the purpose of everything that we do.
Okay, so I guess part of the exercise would be shutting out all those factors and sort of getting to what is innate in us? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say it's not so much shutting it out, Jamie, as it is about, it's like in meditation, right? For those of you who have an experience in meditation, we're not there to resist the thoughts in meditation. We're just there to observe it and say, that's interesting. There's a thought. Let me come back to the focus, the point that I'm focusing on, whether it be a mantra or an image or whatever it is in our meditation. And so what happens is in yoga, the idea is to take that meditation off the mat so that all day, every day, when thoughts come up, when something comes up to disturb you, you're able to witness and say, that's just like an outside disturbance. That's not really my peace. Let me get back in touch with my inner peace and realize that the disturbance is not who I am. It's not actually. So if, let's just say, I stub my toe.
Yep.
Right? And I'm really like, God, it really hurt. And I think like, gosh, my whole day is just a wreck now because I stubbed my toe. This always happens to me. Why do I always have these bad things happen first thing in the morning? So we go on this tirade of crazy thoughts, right? Of like all these thoughts that are telling us, trying to make sense of our world and trying to make sense of what's happening around us. So the thoughts are not bad. They're just, you know, our little minds are trying to make sense of the world. But what our minds think is not always true. So I really like to emphasize with people, just because you think it, that doesn't make it true.
Okay.
A thought is just like, it's a chemical reaction, Jamie. It's just something that fired like a neuron firing in our brain. It doesn't actually mean that it's true. And so really it's about looking at these thoughts and saying, is that true? Yeah, probably not. And that's part of like one of the paths that we do is Jnana Yoga. And Jnana Yoga is really like about analyzing these thoughts and saying, you know, is it really true that my whole day is wrecked because I stubbed my toe? Like, is that really reality? And chances are when you really start to analyze it, you'll find like, that's not really true. That's just, you know, something that I was just thinking because it was just a reaction of the pain that was inflicted on my body in that moment.
This notion that we have peace and happiness at our core, is it always like overtly there, or do we have to work at finding that?
I think it's always overtly there, but the key is to tap into it.
Right.
And so we have to be able to have enough peace within ourselves to actually tap into that peace. If our minds are just crazy, like making a lot of noise, if our emotions are up and down and we're just being swayed here and there by anything that's happening around us, it becomes harder and harder for us to tap into that peace. And one of the things that I think is kind of key here is we're looking at peace in the world, right? So right now in the world, we can all agree it's pretty darn chaotic. I don't know if it's more chaotic than it has been in history, but what we do know is that we're more aware of the chaos. Because of social media, because of the way the news can be reported instantly, because it's on our phones all day, every day, we are evidently aware of all the disharmony in the world in any given moment. So many of us are praying for peace. Many of us want peace. Many of us, you know, hope for peaceful resolutions of wars that are going on right now. But one of the things that Swami Satchidananda used to really emphasize was that you cannot have peace outside of yourself if you don't have it inside yourself. So that's why the work that we do is so important, because you have to start with that peace in yourself. Like, you know, imagine if your spouse takes the last piece of toast and the last piece of bread for breakfast, and you were really, really hungry, and you find that incredibly irritating, and you allow your peace to be disturbed over it, right? So then you get into a big fight with your spouse about a piece of bread. Now, how are we going to have peace over people stealing or taking land from one another or attacking one another when we can't even find peace and harmony in our own home, in our own life, in the small moments in which we exist? So it's like we become the microcosm of the macrocosm of peace. I know it sounds a little trippy, and I'm sure for some of your listeners, they're like, well, Rob has lost me a little here. But no. I promise you that the only way for us to achieve peace outside of ourselves is if we find that peace inside ourselves. And when we find that peace inside ourselves, which some people have, like, you know, Swami Satchidananda, the Dalai Lama, you know, we have all of these examples of people over time who have achieved this peaceful feeling. And when we are in their presence, they automatically just exude peace. So that's what we want to do on an individual basis, is we want to find a way to exude this peace, because we found the peace and we've tapped into the peace within ourselves. And we have a way of not allowing that to be disturbed. And then that peace multiplies and, you know, energetically then brings peace to everyone around us.
All right. Well, let's shift gears a bit and talk about some of the other aspects of the practice that you do, and see how it might fit together. So you have a concept called selfless service. Can you explain that and how it fits into what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Selfless service is one of my favorite ones. So this is karma yoga. And selfless service is one of the quickest and easiest ways to really find your true self or tap into that peace. Because when you serve, you always benefit more than the person you served. I mean, it's just like this miracle. This is why people always are doing volunteer work and they're helping people. It's not just about helping the other person, but it's about the great benefit that we get in our own souls and in our own selves when we serve selflessly. And I think it's really innate in all humans to want to serve, to want to do this work for each other, to reach out a hand to another person and say, you know, let me support you in whatever you're going through. And we get so much wonderful benefit of it. I know people talk a lot about karma in this day and age. I think that word gets thrown around a lot, maybe not always in the right context.
Yep.
But this idea of karma is that when you do an action, you will get an opposite, you know, reaction back, or you will get the action back. So when you, you know, if you harm someone, then yes, it's like there's this little universal recording that says, oh, harm done. Okay, we have to clear that, right? Every little action that we do has some little mark that needs to be cleared. And selfless service is one of the best ways to clear these little marks of hurt or damage or, you know, things that we've done over time. And so that's how, like, when people say, you know, it's karma, it's instant karma, something happens to somebody and they say, oh, that was their karma. What we're talking about is just the reactions from all of these different things that we've done. And so selfless service is a way just to sort of clear the slate and say, I am just doing this for the good of humanity, for the good of the people around me. I have no attachment to what's happening. And it's a way for us to sort of say, okay, I might have harmed someone in the past. I can't go back and fix that directly, but what I can do is I can serve somebody here right now in this present moment, and that will help me to clear out the karma of what existed before.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Absolutely, Jamie. Thank you so much.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Dr. Gordon Chang, our panel of roundtable experts, Joel Thuna, David Nelson, and Sender Deutsch, Dr. Carly Albaum, and Radha Metro-Midkiff. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.